6'6" above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. No power frequency radio. And good afternoon. Welcome to this, the Thursday edition of A Public Affair. I'm your host for this hour. My name is Alan Ruff. With me here in the studio is Lisa Graves. Lisa Graves is the executive director of the all of a sudden.
Center for Media and Democracy.
I always know CMD, Center for Media and Democracy. Sorry, Lisa. And the folks at the CMD, this marvelous crew of researchers and excavators and so on, detectives, if you will, have recently issued a huge report on this network of right-wing so-called, we call them stink tanks, I guess.
Yep.
Of right-wing think tanks. And funding conduits gathered around something called the State Policy Network. So we're going to be discussing that today. Again, one of these huge right-wing combines that is shaping, influencing, buying, subverting, perverting the U.S. political process and society at large. Lisa Graves, welcome.
Alan, it's a joy to be on. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's nice having you back. All right, so let's jump right into this. The State Policy Network, what is that?
The State Policy Network is a web of groups that have been put together by some of the biggest right-wing funders in the country. And what they do is work in tandem often with this group that we've been exposing called the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, to push some pretty extreme measures into law in the states, including here in the state of Wisconsin. And so they've flown below the radar screen, but they're extraordinarily influential, and they have their imprint on many of the really bad policies that have been moving in this state and in other states across the country for many years, including some of the recent initiatives in Wisconsin.
Talk about some of those initiatives. What are they aiming their resources and energy at?
Well, one of the things that these groups, this web of groups that call themselves think tanks, but that we think are better, more aptly called stink tanks, one of the things these groups are really eager to move is privatizing our public education, basically taking your tax dollars out of the public school system, out of public schools for our kids, and moving it into the private sector. The money, these tax dollars get transferred over through a variety of programs, whether it's a voucher program, tax credits, or different schemes that involve charter schools. And overall, the initiative is designed to, in my view, weaken the public schools, take money away from that industry, which Rupert Murdoch has called a multi-billion-dollar industry that he himself wants a piece of, take money out of our public schools and put it into the private sector. And we've just this week documented how one of these schemes that's actually at work here in Wisconsin to expand so-called virtual schools results in massive income for some of these big CEOs. And so when you hear about the highest paid teacher in Wisconsin or America, we think you ought to be thinking about the head of K-12 virtual schools, where you might see their ads on
K-12, a company, a private company.
Yes, K-12, a private company traded on Wall Street. Ron Packard, who's a former Wall Street trader who founded this company, his combined income over a more than 3-year period recently is nearly $20 million. He has more than $20 million in stock that he's accumulated from this company, and the vast majority of this company's income comes from our tax dollars from so-called virtual schools, and they're advertising heavily in Wisconsin, probably with our tax dollars funding those ads to create more virtual schools. And so we think that the highest paid teacher in America is quite frankly the head of K-12 Wall Street traded education company.
Lisa Graves, let's go further into what the State Policy Network is. Tell us about its history, its origins, its background.
Well, State Policy Network was created about 20 years ago. It's actually the brainchild of an industrialist from the South named Thomas Rowe. He had a building supply company, like some other building supply magnets that we've heard here in Wisconsin over at ABC. But focusing on SPN, we had a guy named Thomas Rowe who was very right-wing. He was very instrumental in what's called the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C., which has been super active in pushing some extreme policies over the years. And in the 1980s, he was meeting with Ronald Reagan, who suggested to him that he create a bunch of state state think tanks to really fuel the Reagan revolution in the states, in his view. He also had some conversations with another major wealthy guy funding Heritage about how that guy was going to focus on taking over the Soviet Union, but Thomas Rowe was going to focus on taking over America.
You're listening to Lisa Graves, Executive Director of the Center for Media and Democracy. So what does this SPN do? What is its agenda and how does it function? Describe its structure.
Well, it started with a couple of think tanks in the States, and it's grown now to more than 60 of these think tanks in the States, including two here in the state of Wisconsin, the McIver Institute and the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute. These groups basically work as an amplifier of the ALEC agenda in the states. And so while we've uncovered through our ALEC Exposed investigation on alecexposed.org how that organization, with a budget of about $7 million, has put these bills in the hands of state legislators here and elsewhere to move these bills into law, what these groups do, these SPN groups do, is amplify that. So while ALEC has a budget of about $7 million, the SPN groups combined constitute an $83 million empire, flooding our states cumulatively with more than $80 million a year to advance this agenda.
Okay, so you have the situation where they're self-described as think tanks, but they do more than think. They're not just churning out research, as is the commonly understood definition of a think tank. Of course, I have to inject my friend Jeremy Scahill's mm-hmm. definition of the think tank at the international level, the foreign policy level. First they think and then they send in the tanks.
Yeah.
In some sense, at the domestic level, that's what's happening here.
That's right. These are really operations. They're in some ways closely tied to some of the political leaders in the states, a sort of a political operation that we've helped document how that works. Michelle Malkin, who's the right-wing commentator who's known for her extreme positions, has called them not think tanks but do tanks, because they really are doing policy in the state. And often a lot of these groups don't file any filings with the federal government saying that they are engaged in any lobbying. And so these are tax write-offs that wealthy corporations or individuals give to these groups, and these groups are directly, in many instances, involved in moving policy, lobbying for bills, pushing for bills to be passed passed into law. So most recently in Michigan, actually at SPN's conference this fall, the Mackinac Center in Michigan was basically awarded SPN's highest award for making right to work, the so-called right to work union busting legislation in Michigan, the law of the land in Michigan. We then looked at the Mackinac Center's 990s, and it turns out that they told the IRS they spent zero, not a penny, on lobbying.
For our listeners not familiar with that, what are 990s?
Oh, a 990 is the annual filing that every nonprofit is required to provide to the IRS. And in that filing for a group that's a charity that's listed as a 501c3 organization, there's only a minimal amount of lobbying that such groups can do. Otherwise, corporations would just write off all their lobbying expenses as a charitable donation. And so nonprofits are required to report their lobbying, and they're not supposed to engage in any significant lobbying. And here you have a group in Michigan that's being touted by the DeVos family, the Dick and Betsy DeVos, there in Michigan, two of these big right-wing funders whose fortune comes from the Amway door-to-door sales. They're touting how this so-called think tank was the driver in getting right-to-work legislation passed in Michigan, and yet that group, like many of these SPN groups, claim they do no lobbying.
And then, of course, I was interested in reading and preparing for the program today, and reading about the fact that they also engage, these SPNs also engage in litigation, that they have a use of the court system. I found that very interesting.
Yeah, so this is a multi-pronged operation. These so-called think tanks are busy in the states, not just trying to move public policy in the states. They're almost always located in the state capital near these legislators. But they are also engaged in litigation. So, for example, the Goldwater Institute in Arizona has lawyers there who are at the forefront of trying to take down clean election laws in this country, in Arizona and other states. And so the Goldwater Institute, I wrote a report on them earlier this year before we launched the SPN reports. this SPN report most recently, in which we noted that they have actually been quite successful before some of these right-wing judges in striking down clean election laws through the courts. And then in their last IRS filing, it turned out that they paid their litigators bonuses of $30,000 to $50,000 apiece on top of their six-figure salaries the same year that they got an award for taking down one of Arizona's clean election laws and received money from the taxpayers in the form of Equal Access to Justice Act attorney's fees for doing so. So basically, they won a case striking down Arizona's clean election laws, got paid by the taxpayers to do it under the way the law is written, and then paid themselves massive bonuses in Arizona. That's one of the examples of how these think tanks operate.
You're listening to Lisa Graves. What I found very interesting about this, especially in light of the past several years, stemming off of the work that the center has done, that a lot of people have come to fetishize the Koch brothers and Alec. But this is much bigger. Talk about this larger universe of funders, private and corporate funders.
Well, when we've been investigating these dark money groups, which I call them, although some of them are involved in elections and some of them are not, it's still a lot of dark money being passed around, throwing the voices of some of these really wealthy individuals in our country, CEOs and others who've inherited their wealth to try to change America, basically to remake America in their image. And a lot of these individuals like the Kochs have a very strong affinity for the Ayn Rand cult of greed, this real fetishizing selfishness as the greatest possible good, and along with it a real determination to weaken government, to weaken our public sector, our public institutions, and push everything possible, anything that's not nailed down, and some things that are, into the private sector, into the hands of private wealth. And so I call that, some people call it crony capitalism. I call it, free market fundamentalism. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these folks, it's the DeVoses, the Scaifes, the Coors family, and others. The Waltons, and others who are really a part of this very small number of elites in this country who are funneling money into these operations in the states to really amplify their voice, expand their voice, and literally try to remake America in this image of what they are calling a libertarian point of view, but quite frankly is one that would not resemble really much at all of what has made America strong over this past century.
Talk about the corporations involved.
Well, the other thing we've documented is how there are two prongs to the corporations piece here. One is we've fully documented how much of the ALEC agenda is funded by some of the biggest corporations in the world, including Koch Industries, which is the big oil conglomerate and paper conglomerate, chemical conglomerate owned and controlled by David and Charles Koch, who are two of the richest men in the world, in the top 25 on the entire planet, each of them. But there are other corporations that have been bankrolling the ALEC agenda to make it harder for Americans to vote, to make it harder to sue if your parent is killed from taking a prescription drug that the FDA approved, or to make it harder to sue if you're killed by some guy claiming he was just standing his ground, in addition to a lot of other bad policies. That agenda has been bankrolled by not just the Kochs, but also by the big tobacco companies, Reynolds Tobacco, by AT&T, big telecom. It's been bankrolled by some of the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the country, big pharma and the pharma trade groups. And it's also being pushed and peddled by some of the big railroads. And so you have a real conglomeration in ALEC of some of these enormous companies, along with some of these CEO fortunes, the Walton Foundation, the Koch Family Foundations, and others that are pushing ALEC and getting these bills in the hands of these politicians. And then you have these think tanks that are part of SPN, and they help move that agenda. So they have funders as well. They have some funders in common. Big tobacco money is a longtime funder of the SPN groups. Some other pharmaceuticals like GlaxoSmithKline and others have been funding SPN or SPN groups. And so you do have a corporate agenda being moved and being fueled by them. The other thing you have that I think is perhaps most fascinating in a way and most worrisome is that what we've documented is through ALEC at the American Legislative Exchange Council meetings where politicians are flown in on so-called scholarships funded by these corporations. They have task force meetings where our elected officials sit around a room with the door closed and they vote as equals with corporate lobbyists, unelected corporate lobbyists, and special interest group representatives from these same SPN groups. So Goldwater Institute has reps on some of these task forces, and they actually sit around a room and vote on these bills, these so-called model bills, before they're introduced in the State House. And so, you know, the idea that these special interest groups who are accountable to none of us, or these corporate lobbyists for even some foreign firms like Takeda Pharmaceuticals out of Japan, are getting some kind of equal vote to our elected officials before they bring those bills back in our home state is just outrageous. It is an offense to our democracy.
Hey, Lisa, come on. It's $1, one vote.
Well, that's what some of them say, I think.
Yeah. I found it very interesting in reading through the list. It's a long list of corporate sponsors that the giant of social media, Facebook, is involved in this antisocial behavior.
Yeah, you know, Facebook is a new funder or underwriter in some way of SPN and of ALEC. We looked into this and tried to figure out what was going on there. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about Zuckerberg's own politics or his own agenda, not to mention the impact on privacy of some of their policies. But when we looked at it, we discovered that the Facebook rep to SPN and to ALEC is a woman who previously worked for Charles Koch's Cato Institute and also for CEI, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, another Koch-funded operation. And so in that sense, it's no surprise that Facebook has a person on the job who's got strong Koch connections.
We're talking about the State Policy Network, ALEC, and that whole combine of right-wing power. Tell us about Tracy Sharp.
Tracy Sharp is actually the leader of SPN. She previously worked with one of the think tanks out west in Oregon and sort of came up through their farm team system of raising these right-wing leaders in the state. So she has presided over the massive expansion of SPN. And she's someone who has also worked closely with the so-called donor trust groups or the donor groups. There are two groups that have been uncovered that have close Koch ties that have been called the A-Team of the Right. When we started looking at her, in part, at the same time that a document came out of the Texas Public Policy Foundation out in Texas, obviously, and the TPPF group, one of its financial forms was discovered, it revealed that that organization had received money not just from the Koch family fortune, the philanthropies, but also from Koch Industries itself, so direct checks, which you would never see because Koch Industries is privately held. And it turned out that single think tank in 1 year had received nearly $500,000 from a fund that was described as within Tracy Sharp's control. So we looked at SPN's financial forms to see if that money had appeared as a pass-through. It appeared nowhere in SPN's forms. So it seems quite clear that there's some sort of additional set of funds, a massive set of funds, through which this person could help direct nearly $500,000 to one of the 64 of these think tanks, 63 or 64 think tanks. How much more has she directed through this fund? How much more of this money is flowing out to these groups? Who's really behind their agenda? These are key questions. When you have groups that are so influential in our states, I think people have a right to know more about who's really bankrolling them and whose agenda they're really representing.
You know, of course, Lisa, we live in an age where the generals, Pentagon generals in charge of the commands like CENTCOM in the Middle East that run the Afghan and Iraq wars, they have at their disposal unaccountable hundreds upon hundreds of millions of dollars of what they refer to as walk-around money. Walk-around money, you know, sluices, juices the entire system outside of the purview of Congress, outside of the purview of the public. So what you're describing doesn't surprise me at all. 256-2001, Nigel is telling us that we do have a couple callers. So let's go to our first caller today. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. If most people apply for a job, their resume has to show that they have, the proper education, no matter what the job, and experience to hold that job. And if they say in their letter to the employer, My job, I consider my job at this company to be the destruction of the company. Not only will they not get the job, they'll probably be arrested. Yet our politicians don't seem, you know, from the city council, not that most city councils are this bad, but from city council to the presidency, don't seem to have any restrictions on what they're going to do once they're elected to office. And so many of them are basically acting as saboteurs in exchange for what we all know are bribes. And some of the bribes are small. Some of them are like $19 million to our current holder of the governorship to put a mine in a totally outrageous place.
Thanks for that comment. Lisa Graves.
Well, you know, I think that there's no doubt that the way some of the election laws have been rewritten, or if not how they were written initially, constitutes a form of legalized bribery. And I think that we need dramatic reforms to get some of this money and get this money out of our electoral process. I know that may sound naive, but, you know, it's what we need, whether we can accomplish it or not. I think we have to be aiming for getting this dark money out of our elections and out of the undue influence on our elected officials, because at core, a democracy is supposed to be a type of government, a form of government that represents the people, individual people, not just the mightiest or wealthiest few. It's supposed to represent all of us. And I think through ALEC, what you have is in a way a destruction or diminution, a dilution of that, because you have politicians who seem to be more beholden to the interests of these financial firms that fund ALEC than they are accountable to their own constituents. That's in part because of the disastrous and shameful redistricting that has gone on across the country to create these safe districts. And it's in part because some of these politicians really are more interested in serving the agenda of these wealthy few. So here in Wisconsin, I was astonished to see a bill that was put forward by Representative Zipperer Senator Zipperer and Paul Farrow. Zipperer is now working, you know, very closely with Walker, but when he was in the legislature, they had a bill that would say that if your parent or child were killed by a prescription drug that you would not have the right to sue unless you could prove in advance that they engaged in fraud. And so once the FDA approved a drug, even if it killed you or ruined your ability to have children or otherwise harmed you, you wouldn't be able to sue ever. That's not a bill that the constituents of Farrow and Zipperer were calling for out there in Pewaukee and Waukesha. No matter how red they are in that part of the state, they certainly aren't saying, please make sure I can't sue if a drug kills my family member. But there were those guys, which I called the Pewaukee Posse, basically, pushing this bill. It's an ALEC bill. It was, you know, created in ALEC, passed in ALEC, approved by corporations and some of the big so-called tort lawyers in Washington, D.C., who wanted that bill to basically bar Americans from being able to sue if their family member is injured. That's not the type of bill that any American, quite frankly, who's thinking about it, is calling for, and it certainly isn't a type of bill that a majority of Americans want, but it sure as heck is a bill that some of these big pharmaceutical companies and tort lawyers that back ALEC want.
You know, Lisa, the notion of legalized bribery reminds me of the architect of the political machine in New York City in the 19th century, Plunkett of Tammany Hall, who always used to make the distinction between honest graft and dishonest graft, right? That honest graft was your perks, right? No matter how you brought it down. And dishonest graft was when you stepped out of the bounds, like the time that some of the Tammany Hall guys sold the copper off the roof of City Hall. But let's go back to the phones. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, I wonder if you would comment on what really bothers me is that these people have control of the United States military and police power through their propaganda and money to buy the legislators, and now to try and change the ideology of the schools. These people have found a way to enforce their will by buying the military and the police to enforce what they want. Could you comment on that, please?
Well, you know, we have been looking into the use of the Homeland Security dollars to monitor Americans, both through the Occupy Wall Street and otherwise. Obviously, here in Wisconsin, there's been tremendous use of the police and the Capitol Police to enforce what I think are, quite frankly, unconstitutional provisions restricting the freedom of speech at the Capitol and otherwise. But what we discovered, quite frankly, was that, in fact, there has been coordination between some of these business interests. There's actually a part of DHS that works directly with business interests to protect businesses and monitor citizens. So one of the things we uncovered through our open records investigation was that when Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan was headed to Arizona to talk about his view of banking and banking reforms, the Homeland Security folks were, you know, basically there to protect him, make sure that he was able to give that speech at a stadium. Turned out when Jesse Jackson came to Arizona shortly thereafter to talk about the effect of ALEC on Americans' lives, they weren't actually there looking out for how to protect Jesse Jackson. They were there trying to find out where Jackson was, who he was speaking to, and who would be at this protest. And so we uncovered how Homeland Security apparatus has been used to monitor protesters of ALEC, as well as protesters who are standing up to the big banks. And we think that that's a misuse of those powers. And it's very damaging and destructive. With respect to this other part of the ALEC agenda, one of the things that's more insidious, or maybe not more insidious, obviously, than political military control, but insidious in a different way, is how ALEC and these think tanks had systematically pushed for the privatization of prisons, for increasing sentences for Americans who are accused of crimes and convicted of various crimes, which then fueled greater prison populations to the benefit of some of the prison corporations that were bankrolling ALEC for years. That prison privatization scheme has led to, you know, mass incarceration. It has also led to massive increase in our budget to the point where we are, and we have been for years, where we spend more on housing prisoners than on schools. That agenda, that is the direct result of corporate influence over these state legislators who've been pushing these schemes to enrich these corporations, enrich the for-profit prison industry. And these SPN groups have been right there alongside ALEC pushing these schemes in many of these states.
You know, it gets to what I was hearing in the caller's question was this deeper issue of this, what some commentators on these questions refer to as the velvet glove and the iron fist. That always behind the public relations and the spin and the expensive suits and ties is the mailed fist of the promise, certainly, of repression. You know, it gets back to some of our listeners certainly heard the program last week with Henry Giroux.
Right.
Henry Giroux talking about the new authoritarianism. And what I found most interesting in the article, preceding, you know, that had me bring him on the program, was this notion of that it's not just haphazard, and that there's now this kind of structural and institutional, what he calls a new social formation of the right, that the Democrats, or more broadly speaking, traditional American liberalism has no defense against, really. So, I as I said earlier, this whole business of, you know, people have come at some in some ways to kind of, well, everything's ALEC, everything's the Koch brothers. But there's much bigger, complex structures and institutions and how they've moved into, moved into every dominant institution, the media, you know, and of course our caller just referenced the media as well.
Well, I think that I do think that there are a lot of structural things that are going on. And I think in some ways you can see that most predominantly in our trade policies, where you have corporate politicians, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, pushing for this a number of pieces of trade legislation or trade agreements that obviously have the effect of shipping American jobs overseas, of weakening the U.S. economy. But also what you see in these trade agreements, and Mary Batari on our team at CMD is really one of the national experts on these issues. What you see is a whole different legal structure being created about whether your rights in this country can be enforced, whether our rights, our consumer protection laws, or other rights can be enforced in these trade agreements, and whether you're going to have a chance to enforce your rights in a court of law with a jury of your peers, or whether your rights are going to be supposedly considered by a tribunal that's constructed by corporations to evaluate whether your rights can be honored or would be honored. You know, it's one of the things that's sort of interesting in that respect is that the right wing has been extraordinarily loud in complaining about the United Nations, that the United Nations is supposedly trying to take over control and displace local control and local government. That's where they are focusing a lot of their ire internationally. I think that's a deliberate effort to distract Americans and Americans who might call themselves Republicans or Tea Party Republicans from the much larger issue. The United Nations is, quite frankly, extraordinarily weak in lots of ways that, you know, aren't helpful, both, you know, on health and environment and other issues. They're really weak compared to the power that these corporations are exerting through creating their own private laws in the guise of trade agreements. And that's actually where people ought to be. If they're concerned about the United Nations, they ought to wake up and take a big look at the trade bills that are trying to be that are being pushed in the U.S. both with Europe and Asia.
The question or comment for our guest today, Lisa Graves from the Center for Media and Democracy. Let's go back to the phones. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hello, Alan.
Go ahead.
Yes, I had a question. I don't know if you'll be able to answer this or not, but could you say something about Bohemian Grove? Which is the place where this meeting takes place annually that's restricted to males of privilege who gather there and discuss events of political and world interest, supposedly. Is any of the decision-making that is taking place now in a format similar to ALEC, does any of that take place at Bohemian Grove, if you know? And I'll take my answers off the air, and thanks for taking my call.
Well, we haven't traced any of the SPN sort of activities back to Bohemian Grove, which is a beautiful wooded area near San Francisco, which, you know, has long been a gathering place of some of the richest of the rich men to hang out and party and, you know, talk about all sorts of things, including politics, I'm sure.
Well, these guys wouldn't talk about their work.
but you know, there has been tremendous investigative reporting talking about the Koch brothers' gatherings in Aspen and down at Rancho Mirage. I was actually out at Rancho Mirage outside one of their gatherings 2 years ago when Greenpeace had that great blimp with the Koch brothers emblazoned on it to try to wake people up about what was happening there. As people have discovered through some great investigative reporting coming out of there, including Lee Fong's work, there have been the Koch brothers have been assembling other right wing billionaires and millionaires to really invest heavily in the elections and invest in these sorts of groups. And there's a tape that came out of one of those sessions that was really revealing about the level of coordination. And I think you can see that through in some ways through this donors trust ATM of the right that has been uncovered. And you can see it, you know, manifesting in other ways. It just came out this past month. That Freedom Partners is a group that that CMD, my group, has documented is riddled with Koch operatives. Nick Sergey on our staff wrote a great story about that on our PR Watch site, talking about how this group is really staffed largely by Koch operatives. It turns out that Freedom Partners spent $250 million in the 2012 election cycle, starting from just before 2012 and throughout 2012. That's a quarter of $1 billion that was spent being funneled to a whole bunch of different groups, including the National Federation of So-Called Independent Businesses, the National Association of Manufacturers, a number of right-wing groups to run ads in the election, so-called issue ads. And so while we had the most expensive election in the history of the world this last year in 2012, there were billions, literally billions spent cumulatively among the money that was traced. That's, you know, we can only trace the money that is reported in essence. No one knew that the Koch brothers through Freedom Partners and whoever else is helping them fund Freedom Partners injected an additional $250 million in issue ads. You know, that's big. That's a big deal for this sort of dark money to be floating around, influencing people, distorting our debate, distorting our democracy, and have no accountability and no idea of who's actually funding it. So that's a big issue, and there is connection between, you know, some of those funders, we think, and SPN. SPN is funded to the tune cumulatively of nearly $2 million of their funding, of SPN's money. Funding has come from the donors trust or donor capital funds. That's dark money. It's a way to hide who the true donors are, so all we can tell you, it's the donors group. And we think that that's a direct result of some of the efforts of the Koch brothers.
And, of course, it's often shielded by the catch-all term philanthropy. I mean, I've read enough about some of these operations, actually bipartisan, transcending affiliation across the spectrum, but certainly on the right, where they talk about leveraged philanthropy,
right,
results-based philanthropy. You touched about on that in some of this stuff.
Well, it's quite extraordinary. And Wisconsin is actually the home of some of that leveraged philanthropy. The Bradley Foundation, which is led by Michael Grebe, one of the right-hand men or advisors to Scott Walker, they're one of the biggest forces in the country in terms of the money they've injected into the political process, into the and by that I mean these groups that may not be involved in PAC activity, but are clearly involved in a lot of activity to influence our lawmaking, to influence our public policy. They fund what they describe as educational groups, and so there's an exemption in the law for education about the law, in essence. So these groups, they don't say that they're funding lobbying per se, but it turns out that the Bradley Foundation has been funding a lot of worrisome things, I think. There was some documents that leaked about the Heartland Institute in Chicago, in which they were talking about, in which the Heartland Institute, not Bradley, but was talking about different sorts of voter operations here in Wisconsin, in our home state. There were some linkages that our staff counsel, our general counsel, Brennan Fisher, identified for the money running those billboards in Milwaukee, talking about voter fraud to try to chill people, from voting or think that they didn't have a right to vote. There are some interesting things happening on that front. And Bradley funds a lot of things. They fund a lot of, musical or other philanthropic endeavors, and they also fund a lot of these groups. In fact, Scott Ross from One Wisconsin Now has done a tremendous job writing up the Bradley Foundation's influence in the state on these two think tanks, these two SPN groups, the McIver Institute and the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, and how much of their money, how many, millions of dollars, in essence, has come from McIver to fuel these operations in the state.
Nigel's telling me that we have three callers currently in the queue, and I want to get everybody in before the end of the hour, so let's go back to the phones. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Thank you. One of the ways that I've noticed for a number of years that these think tanks function, and specifically Cato Institute, Heritage Foundation, is that whenever a particular issue or proposed legislation is up for discussion, whether it's the national television talk shows or Wisconsin Public Radio talk shows, these organizations are always Johnny on the spot with a spokesperson to come on the shows and give the right wing point of view, and it's just one more way that these right wing organizations, foundations have a disproportionate amount of exposure in the national public media.
Thank you, caller.
Well, that's right. One of the things that we've found is how these groups have worked on building relationships with the press in order to get quoted as if they were some sort of independent expert. What we uncovered, and what Rebecca Wills on our staff, who led the way on our report, uncovered, was how much of these groups are actually part of an echo chamber in which you have the state imprint saying this is the Wisconsin Institute or the Goldwater Institute or the Freedom Foundation of Minnesota, and it looks like it's a state expert talking about it. Turns out that often, a lot of times, they're just basically repackaging some sort of set of statistics, cooked books to really promote a policy agenda, and it's not unique to the state at all. It's just branded as unique to the state or branded for the state. That's part of the the way these groups have been so potent in doing that. And they do that on a lot of areas, including on the trade issues. They back the trade issues as if it were good for their own state, when in fact it's part of a national agenda of SPN to back these trade policies.
You know, I've often noticed what our caller was referring to on the state public radio network early in the morning, the early morning talk show. Invariably, when there's something hot, there's somebody from the right on those programs. They're on the list. They're the go-to people. It astounds me sometimes. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a short comment to make, and then I had a question. I think it is always good to question authority and collect our own facts and not rely on the propaganda by these power structures, think tanks, whether they're corporate or governmental. But too often we trust media to tell us what to think and what information to consider. And too often media and propaganda focuses on emotional issues rather than the public's rational concerns. Only someone who would be blind to history would deny that emotional and irrational appeals have frequently succeeded in manipulating the public. A lot of the way we behave depends upon what part of our personality expresses itself. If you appeal to someone's better nature, you get a different result than if you appeal to their worst impulses. But too often, worst impulses succeed in this world of propaganda.
I want to know, to
what degree the public's irrationality is a self-fulfilling prophecy of their own creation, or do communication strategies treat us like children or like thinking adults?
Well, I think that, I mean, there's no doubt that emotion is a powerful force in persuading people, whether it's manipulating people or whether it's with the truth. The truth can be a very potent force as well. It takes a lot of money to put out all this propaganda, which we think is part of this SPN operation. But what I think in some ways is the more disconcerting thing is how these groups put out, you know, a quote, and it's just picked up by the news as if it's true. So just because a group makes a quote doesn't mean it's true. So just recently, when our report was unveiled, the head of SPN, Tracy Sharp, gave this quote talking about how this is much ado about nothing, and how her groups, these SPN groups, are quote, fiercely independent. And then Jane Mayer, the great investigative reporter for the New York Times, or pardon me, for the New Yorker, ran a story just following on that based on notes from a meeting where Tracy Sharp was speaking to her outside of the press to her members, in which she talked about how their operation is like IKEA, how you should consider it like a catalog so that they can win in the states on these policies.
Yeah, take it home to your states and put it together yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Right, right. And so you have this disconnect between what's said publicly in a PR release versus what's actually true.
Let's go. We got two more people waiting to get in, so let's get them in. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello, Alan. I think it would be helpful at any time we talk about trade, we talk about NAFTA and the Clintons and the connection between the terrible damage done to farming in Mexico and the loss of a couple of million, possibly that high, subsistence farmers forced off the land, and the massive immigration increase.
Thank you, Corey.
Well, you know, it is the case that these destructive trade policies have a bipartisan flavor to them. They've been pushed by members of both parties. There's some hope that one of the fallouts of the most recent NSA revelations is that the trade agreement that's being pushed regarding Europe may not go through. And that's another trade policy that has harmful effects on, I think, the U.S. economy, but also U.S. Agriculture. And Mary Batari wrote about that for PR Watch most recently.
Let's get in our last caller for the day. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, the Koch brothers spent $122 million on the last election cycle. One of the big problems with our electoral politics is the DLC, and they're kind of a fifth column. And I understand they went out of business in 2011. Now they've been replaced by the new Democratic coalition. What can you tell me about them?
Well, I'm no fan of the DLC, I have to say, but you know, there have always been these sort of so-called blue dog Democrats in Congress who, you know, basically when you look at some of those party votes on some of these issues, you see 100% of the Republicans, and then you know a handful or up to you know 40 or 60 Dems in the House who are standing with them on some of these trade policies and other policies. You know, I think what we've had, and John Nichols has described this, I think, most evocatively, we've just had this growth of the corporate party here in the country. And he and Bob McChesney have a new book out called Dollarocracy that really traces how this big money is influencing both parties and distorting some of the origins of both parties, or the so-called principles of the parties, selling us out, basically. Where our politics are being sold out to the highest bidder. I think, just to correct one thing, Koch brothers, you know, purportedly spent more than $100 million in the election, you know, on perhaps direct donations, but they spent an untold greater sum on these other operations. And so, but they're not the only ones. There are a lot of these big billionaires who are at work trying to change our rights and try to sell it to us as if it's a really good thing for us. And you see often people embracing this agenda unknowingly or unthinkingly. But what we've tried to do at our site, at prwatch.org, through our documentation at sourcewatch.org, through our expose at alecexpose.org, all of which you can access through prwatch.org, and our newest effort through the Stink Tanks report, what we try to document is what's really happening and what you can do about it, so that it's not just a feeling of hopelessness, but that you have some sense of what's happening and how you can stand up, speak out, and change things to make things better. So we are inherently hopeful, even though we're skeptics at heart. We're hopeful about the fact that more people are waking up than ever before, and we can actually confront, challenge, and change these policies that are wrecking our democracy.
You know, Lisa Graves, we just have a few minutes left, and there's something I wanted you to touch on, and that is the news this past week or so about this new wide-ranging probe of the Walker campaign Republicans. I know that the Center and PR Watch has done a little bit on that. What can you tell us?
Well, we've been investigating on our own, in our own way, through our examination of dark money. We've been looking into David Koch's Americans for Prosperity arm here in the state. We actually filed our own complaint with the IRS, a citizen complaint, 2 years ago, or a year ago, I guess it's been, about Mark Block, who's a longtime Koch associate, Koch ally, and his Prosperity groups in the state. We've been looking at Wisconsin Clever Growth, what they're up to. What happened extraordinarily this weekend was that the Wall Street Journal clearly got a leak from one of these targets of the investigation, and said that a number of groups had, or homes in essence, had been raided for information related to a criminal probe. We don't know where that probe is going. We don't know what's going to happen. It looks like it's focusing on the recall election and possible coordination of some groups, but we'll have to wait and see what happens. We are busy looking into it. Brendan Fisher on our staff, along with me and Mary Batari. Mary Batari and I have all been looking closely at these groups, and we have a lot of ongoing research to try to figure out what they're up to and how they're trying to influence our elections and our public policy in the state.
Well, Lisa, you know, you kind of wrapped it up just prior, but again, give the websites how people can stay posted on the fabulous research at various levels that the Center for Media and Democracy has been doing. Yeah, you know, those URLs or whatever are the websites, and maybe a word about or I don't know if you could talk about it, but projects in the works.
Oh, well, so the easiest way to get our information and to get the breaking news and to get reports on our investigations is to go to prwatch.org. Prwatch.org is our main website, and from there you can get to all of our resources and all of our investigative work. So that's a significant resource, we think, for you, for not just kitchen table conversations at Thanksgiving, but also to help shape the national debate. And we have a lot of work that's in the queue, including the fact that ALEC is meeting in Washington, D.C. the first week of December. We plan on being there and helping to shine a light on them and shine a light on the Wisconsin delegation, as well as the national delegation that's there to advance this agenda. One of the things we discovered, and Nick Sergey on our research team discovered, was how ALEC is at least thinking about pushing back on country of origin labels. which means not being told when you buy a product at the shelf of the grocery store what country it comes from. That's just an outlandish proposal, but it's one of many outlandish proposals that will be considered at that conference, including renewed attacks on renewable energy, increased efforts to push the Keystone Pipeline into practice, efforts to their ongoing efforts to preempt local democratic control to protect us so that we can't protect ourselves from these big mines or these big fracking operations that are polluting our water and ruining precious resources. There's a lot happening on education, on worker rights, on healthcare and privatization efforts. And we're going to be there in Washington, D.C. in 2 weeks covering that. And we hope that you'll tune in essence, to our PR Watch site and find out what's happening and keep track and help spread the word.
Well, if you have some big breaking story, you're also always welcome to come. I've been your host for this hour. My name is Alan Ruff. I want to thank Megan, who's sitting here with us in the studio on her laptop, and Nigel, of course, on the boards, the irrepressible Mr. Nigel. Carol out on the phones. You are listeners.
This land is your land. For you and